Dick and I just have a few things we'd like to share with you. I'd like to do just a little more theology, and then Dick will translate that into something that's useful.
What a task.
I think, and many of us think, of course, and I know some of you think, that the number one crisis of our particular time is the crisis of our relationship, the human relationship to the environment or to creation or to nature. Because we all know if we cannot solve this basic relationship, there won't be a relationship, and the human beings, at least as we currently know them, will cease to exist. So we have an environmental crisis today. Some think that if certain kinds of decisions are not made in the next decade, that certain forces will become irreversible, perhaps forces that will spell the end for humankind. Now, as a theologian, when I begin to think about this problem, I think that this is also our number one theological problem today. And of course, I wish it was much higher on the agenda of our churches and other religious communities than it is. We make some noise about it, and we write a social statement or two, but the reality is it's not been very much of a priority item. Now, what is the root of the problem? From my perspective, I think the root of the problem is that human beings are separated from their own soul. And that is the very root of the environmental problem today, that we are separated from our own inner nature. And soul for me, you know, we could define that in a whole variety of interesting ways, all of which would have truth in them, but simply for our purposes today, I'm using soul to mean the essence of what you are. It's another word, in a sense, for your own nature. Soul and nature are words that are very closely connected to each other. And I think one of the routes, certainly not the only route, but one very important route back to our own soul is through nature and through wilderness. If we could begin to do what Dick was describing for us, I think particularly in the second hour this morning, see the land with new eyes and read the land and sense the land, that those same kinds of principles are also the same principles that one could use to see oneself and to see others. The fact is that we not only pass through the land and don't see it, we often pass through life and don't see it, or pass by ourselves and don't see ourselves. And there is, in my judgment, a strong interconnection between all of these things. We have grown up in a world where we have been rewarded by our ability to manipulate, to manage, to consume, to create, we've lived in a world that has as its operative kind of motif, in my judgment, what I would call a lopsided extroversion. And we have thus forgotten about the soul and about what's going on inside. The soul itself gets projected outside. Before coming here, I was had the good fortune to serve a congregation that was made up largely of corporate executives. That was my first experience in such a congregation. Largely, the parishes I've served have been urban and have largely been filled with people on the lower economic scale. So this was a real reversal for me, to suddenly be in a congregation filled with people who have been very successful in our society and the way we have structured it. And we had many, many conversations on into the night for hours about essentially how they had projected their own soul onto the corporation and were essentially working out their sense of meaning and direction and purpose through being successful and climbing the corporate ladder and so forth. I wrote a piece called An Office with Windows on Two Sides. You know, that's the, if you really make it in the corporation, maybe even in the Forest Service, I was in Sonny O'Neill's office and I noticed he had windows on two sides.
You noticed he was in it?
What?
I was never in my office. I don't know how anyone was in it.
But if you know, if you really make it, even at ELCA headquarters, you get an office with, you know, in the corner with windows on two sides, you know. And of course, when you start out in the bullpen there in the middle, and then the walls get higher as you move along in the corporate structure. And pretty soon you get an office with a door, even. I think that's the next thing. That's true in Chicago at our church headquarters. You go from the bullpens to an office with a door, and then ultimately you get an office with one windows on one side and windows on two sides. Anyway, I felt qualified to talk to these people about this issue of projecting your soul outside yourself because there's nobody more guilty of that than ministers who project their own soul onto the institution, particularly if you're a parish pastor, onto the local congregation. And then you evaluate yourself, you know, on the three B's, bodies, buildings, and budgets. And the better those are going, then you see the better you feel about yourself, and the more successful you think you are, and the more life seems directed and fulfilling and so forth. And you're busy working out your own salvation by making this institution successful. Suddenly, usually for ministers, that all comes crashing down at some point. Some successfully make it to retirement. Fewer and fewer are these days. Before it all sort of comes crashing down, they have to figure out a different way, which usually has to do with more getting in touch with their own soul and then being one who enables others to get in touch with their souls. Or I can, you know, super moms do it. I mean, that's another way in our society or whatever. I mean, and because we projected our soul out there, and not got in touch with it in here, it means that our soul becomes disoriented within us. This lopsided extroversion creates disorder. Another word we would use for it today is dysfunction. And because our relationship with our own soul is in a dysfunctional state, it creates havoc outside. So the basic point I want to make this morning, I would like you to reflect on as you begin to not only see and read and look at the land, but to think about, as you're doing that, think about how that relates to what's going on inside of you, is this basic principle that the more we have become fascinated with manipulating our outer world in the name of progress, the more we have become estranged from our inner world, and the more we have become estranged from our inner world, the more destructive we have become in our outer world or in creation. And so what I'd like to suggest is that the two are inextricably connected, one with another. And that now is a good time for us to simply stop. To simply stop this craziness and get in touch not only with the realities in our outer world, but get in touch with the realities of our inner world. And I think that getting in touch by really seeing and listening and hearing our outer world and then applying those same principles to our inner world can be a marvelous step for all of us. There is a sense in which it's really true, getting in touch with outer nature is a way, not the only way, but a way of getting in touch with our own inner nature. The wilderness within goes wild when we damage the wilderness without. And if our wilderness within is wild, it will damage, as there are so many evidences of, the wilderness without. And so listening to God in the wilderness is a very important task for us. Religious experience takes many different forms, and it seems to me we need to take them all seriously. But one definition of religious experience that's helpful to me is the simple definition. If somebody asks me, what is religious experience? One way to answer that is that when one has a religious experience, one sees things differently. If you have an experience that, and after that you see things differently, that has been a religious experience for you. And that will change you. You will not be the same again. And Dick was talking to us, has been talking to us all morning about how to see things differently. And of course, as you see your outer world or see things differently, you will see yourself differently. So we want to learn to savor the wilderness, to fall in love with it, to have what the famous theologian Martin Buber says is an I-thou relationship with the wilderness, because he claimed that in that kind of relationship one glimpses God or one glimpses the eternal. Okay, Dick, you're going to unpack our pack for us a moment, and then we're going to send these good folks out.
I want to share a technique that has served me well for much of my life, and particularly in my last 25 years, of managing the load that we carry in our back, which is a source of stress even for those of us who think we are living a non-stressful life. Every time I come up here, I feel the stress drain off just in the first hour. As we separate ourselves from the realities of our life outside. And I've used this technique with some pretty tough audiences, like all the rangers, all the district rangers in the region, which is about 75 people of varying ages and women and men, and a pretty tough audience. And they all knew me so well. This happened to be right down here in Chelan. They were having a ranger meeting, which they rarely ever have together. And I shared what I'm about to share with you is a technique to do some self-meditation examination and really personal stress management with that group, knowing that there'd be some snickers and this can't be the real Bush talking, you know, and because they had their own picture of me. But I had a wonderful reward from that experience, because I had, over a period of a few weeks. And I just encourage them to try it if it made sense. Over a period of a few weeks, I had about 15 out of that 60 personally contact me. And so they tried it, and they said, this worked for me. And it is real. It is not an exercise. It's real. I made my decision to retire during this same period, 3 years ago, of a wilderness spirituality retreat, when everyone went out and did what you're about to do. And I decided, I had a real need. I didn't always do it just because of this session, but I had a real need to do it. Personal need. I got up here on the beautiful place up on the highest tailings pile and hunkered down in the snow and got inside myself and realized it was time for me to make a life change for a real good reason. I was taking away in this wonderful life I was living, spending most of my time in the mountains with wonderful people on things I cared about, trying to affect their lives and their work. I was taking away the years, the precious years, of however many are left with my that belong to my wife and myself. And so I did for her. I didn't do it for her. She didn't need me to retire. And I needed to retire so that I did no longer deprive myself of that life together we'd earned. So it works. It goes like this. It's very simple. Find yourself a place to hunker down and get comfortable with yourself and stomp out a little hole in the snow. And the snow's good. It's more conducive to this. I can do it anywhere. And I do it in my backyard in the evening at night, leaning against a tree. But something about the snow enclosing you in the person that talked about the solitude and the quiet that is so inherent in a snow scene, and it is there even though there's sound. Get comfortable, get within yourself, study your surroundings first. Drain that awareness. You're still carrying the thoughts of things that were said here, conversation at lunch. You got to give a little time to let that stuff leave you. And really let your mind go blank to awareness of your surroundings. And then do this simple thing. Realize that we figuratively do carry a pack on our back. And unpack that pack. Start taking the things out of that pack figuratively and laying them in the snow in front of you. And you may have a child with a drug problem, maybe a troubled marriage. All the things we carry, a neighbor or a relative you have great concerns about. And there's so many things that we carry in our lives, or things we're guilt that we're carrying about ourselves. Procrastination of things we shouldn't and maybe must do and we keep putting off because of things we don't want to do. Get those out. And then do this. Really study what you've been carrying. These things you have been carrying are there in front of you, and you look at them and repack your pack. Repack your pack in this order. Those things that are your responsibility, your bad habit that needs changes, the thing you must do that was discomfortable for you to do, whatever those things are that are unavoidable and you have been trying to avoid, or correctable and you have not corrected, put those back. Put them back in your pack. Put them back with a determination and a schedule, a personal commitment to yourself to act. You must formulate that action plan. Don't just put them back, you'll just keep running, carry them. And stress will kill you. The next thing you'll find is that you're carrying some things that were your responsibility, and procrastination has succeeded. It's too late to do them. It could be a lot of things. It could be an apology to someone. And it's just, if an apology is not timely, you've hurt someone, it may be too late. Don't carry the guilt anymore. It's too late. Think of some manner, perhaps, in a case like that, you can correct it. But those things that no longer can be done, they may be a heavy item in your professional life that should have been done, you didn't get it done, you're still carrying the guilt. Get rid of them. Leave them in the snow. Leave them in the snow. And then you'll find that you're also carrying other people's troubles. Children's, spouses, friends, whoever. Someone at work that's dishonest. That was a real case with me. I was carrying the problems, didn't solve it. Understand that it's not your problem. And it's not yours to carry. So leave those things in the snow, but put in your pack a determination to do the Christian thing, to help. If you can be a source of a help for the person whose problem you've been carrying, to get them to face it
and you can assist them in solving it, then put that in your pack and in your action plan, and take that back with you too, and meet that commitment. And then, whether they're successful or not in your help, if you succeed, it's good. If you fail, that's bad for them, not for you. Because you've done what you could do, but you've got to get that load off your back. And I found so often that the things that I leave in the snow are things of that nature. Well, I'm a procrastinator, so there's a bunch of that stuff that's too late to do. But the heavies, the things that were really troubling me, are often somebody else's load. And in some cases, I can help. In some cases, I can't be an influence. But I can't carry the problem as well. So that's just it. That's all there is to it. If you're of a mind, try it. You may now scatter to the wilderness. All the survivors should be here for dinner.
Yeah, we'll take count at dinner time. If any of you, I know some of you have skis and snowshoes. Some of you may wish to walk. We have rounded up some extra pair of snowshoes. If you'd like those, I'll meet you up here on the loading dock, and we can.
If you just walk, and then my strong recommendation is go downstream, because of course you go, like I said, all the way to Lucerne. You have a hard packed surface until you find a place and just plunge into the snowbank and find yourself someplace just off the road. But if you're just walking and you don't have snowshoes or skis, then go downstream, because it's all beautiful here.
It's a beautiful day.
All days are beautiful here.